All right, thanks, Bruce. Makes you really nervous when your presentation doesn't come up right away. Anyway, I've been working on this this project to study precision water stress in tree crops, and the two methods that we've been using are thermal imaging and trunk hydration, and I'll talk a little bit more about those as we go along. We found out that this problem is a little bit more complex and more difficult than we maybe originally anticipated. The idea is we, all over the nation or even in the world, we're trying to save water in agriculture because we use so much water as far as the total water use in agriculture. But we still, in the orchard industry, have to balance the yield and the tree health. So we want to keep those two things in there. But when we're talking about tree fruit crops, we actually have another component, and that's the quality of the fruit. So people have discovered through a lot of research that if there's a small amount of water stress at certain points, or even in some crops, a small amount of water stress throughout the growing season, the fruit quality is actually better. And so that kind of gives us an edge over a crop that's just grown primarily for yield, because if your yield is reduced a little bit in a fruit tree crop, but your quality is better, the bottom line is the same or maybe even better. So we kind of went through a lot of research trying to figure out what techniques might work. And the first thing, obviously, would be below ground measurements of soil water or soil moisture. And the biggest problem with that is we have no idea exactly where the roots of these trees are or where they're pulling water from. So it's kind of hard to say where we should put the soil moisture sensor. And so I guess we could take the route of putting a soil moisture sensor everywhere, but that would be pretty expensive and difficult to do. So people have not had good luck predicting tree water status based on soil moisture measurements. The next thing would be to do above ground measurements of stomatal conductance. The biggest problem with a measurement like this is we're taking a single measurement at a single point in time, or maybe multiple measurements in the canopy, and then we're trying to extrapolate that to an entire tree or even further to an entire orchard. And the possibility of introducing error in that's pretty big. So that's not likely a good candidate. Kind of the gold standard that people have used, and other people have talked about this, is to do plant water potential using a pressure chamber. So covering a leaf with a Mylar bag and allowing it to equilibrate with the equilibrate for at least an hour, and then applying nitrogen gas to a point where sap is exuded from the cut petiole. And this works really well, and people can base irrigation off of it, but it's not automatable. So it's difficult, and it's labor intensive, and you kind of have to, I can tell you this by experience, you kind of have to do it a few times before you have any idea what you're doing. So it's kind of a difficult thing to do, so it'd be great if we had some automated method to do that. Another possibility, and people have had varying success with this technique, is to measure fluctuations in the trunk circumference using a dendrometer. The biggest challenges with that is it's pretty tricky to use a dendrometer in young, rapidly establishing trees. It has pretty good potential, but it's also pretty expensive. So the first technique that we're trying is to use an infrared radiometer to get leaf temperature differences. The biggest problem that we're encountering with this in tree crops is field of view problems. So Chris could tell you in corn, he had pretty good luck once the canopy closed. It was a pretty accurate representation. But between the rows between the orchard trees and the space that's already pruned into the orchard system to allow light to penetrate the canopy, it's pretty easy to have our infrared radiometer see things like the ground or big branches that we don't want to see, and that just add noise to our data. So one thing that we've done to try to overcome that is take a radiometer and put it at a shallow angle out over an entire orchard to try to eliminate those field of view issues. So here's an example of what I'm talking about. On the left, there's a single tree, and if you look closely enough, you can see a little plastic PVC cap for a neutron probe actually underneath the tree. So you can see what I'm talking about, how the radiometer could easily see things that we don't want to see. And on the right, we have one over a whole orchard, which you can see is also not perfect. There's a little bare spot where a tree is missing in the foreground. But you can see that would average a lot more of leaf temperature than a single tree. Okay, so this is tartary leaf temperature differences, leaf to air temperature differences. And what we're hoping to see is the leaf temperature difference gradually increasing, and then when we have an irrigation event, which are the purple bars or the red bars of rainfall, then we want to see it decline again and then increase before irrigation event. And as you can see, there are some general trends that work, but there are also a lot of places where you definitely couldn't say with much confidence that we're able to predict the water stress. If we take it to a whole orchard level, we're still looking for the same kind of thing, these increases, and you can still see that it's not a clear-cut thing where we can say, oh yes, we can predict what's going on based on this technique. Okay, so the second technique that we're doing is kind of a new thing, and what we're doing is taking a volumetric water content sensor, and we use two different models, the Decagon GS1 and the Campbell Scientific CS655, and we drill pilot holes into the trunk of the tree or a scaffold branch of the tree that were just larger than the probes on the sensors, and we put them into the tree. Then we used a line source irrigation system to set up an irrigation gradient. And we compared all of our measurements with stem water potential as kind of our basis. So what we see here is we can see our stem water potential before the irrigation is a pretty large negative number in these low irrigation levels. And after irrigation, those numbers come back to a less negative number so that we can see we did get drought stress and the irrigation alleviated it. So what we're hoping to see when we're looking at these volumetric water content measurements is we're hoping to see the volumetric water content declines between irrigations each time. So we're looking for this kind of a trend. And we don't have a really steep slope here, but we do have a little bit of a trend, but you can see I'm only showing you the lowest irrigation level, and that tended to be the only place where we could see this trend. If we look at peaches, it's the same kind of thing, although we did get a little steeper slope in our line here. So, to go back to the main point that we're trying to find a replacement for stem water potential, we have to do the correlation between the two metrics. And if we look at stem water potential with trunk water content for peaches, if we look at these two, we get, you know, a not really great R-squared, but at least they're going in the right direction. The problem is, if we don't cherry-pick the data, this is what we end up with. And you can see the purple line there is going steeply in the opposite direction of what we would hope. So unfortunately, we still have some work to do before we could recommend this. Here's the graph for tart cherries. It's kind of the same story, with the exception that we did get a little bit more negative stem water potentials in general in the cherries, which is good. And the other thing is we don't have any lines that are going opposite of what we would expect. We would expect our ample irrigation and our 81% of ample to be pretty flat lines, indicating there wasn't much stress, and we see that. In apples, our trends are going the right direction, but not very good correlation vectors. In conclusion, these both have a lot of potential, but they need a lot of refining. So one thing that we have looked into is trying to use a higher frequency true TDR sensor to do this. And so in this piece of apple wood that we have here, we've got a CS655 and we have the new Acclima TDR 315 sensor. And I'm showing you the permittivity values from the same piece of wood over the same period of time. And as you can see, the permittivity values are a little bit higher with the Acclima sensor, and they also have a steeper response to hydration than the CS655. And Bruce and my current theory on this is that the true TDR has a little bit better ability to distinguish between bound and unbound water inside the plant structure than a lower frequency sensor. So I guess our next plan for this current summer's worth of research is to try these TDR sensors and see if we can get a more sensitive response. All right, hopefully I didn't go over.
I don't know what you people know, but this sensor right here that you can hardly see is a black sensor from the climate. That's a 1 gigahertz frequency. They say it says true TDR right on the sensor. more expensive, but it's a much higher frequency sensor. And in a tree, we're trying to get, it's not air and water mixes we're trying to study, but it's bound and unbound water in the trunk of the tree, so it's a little more challenging.
Have you thought about trying to use some thermal imagery instead of single observation, because then you get a better spatial sampling of the temperature.
Sure.
Get some sort of distribution.
The question is, have we tried or thought about trying thermal imaging? And the answer to that is yes. We definitely have considered it, because the first summer that we did this experiment with tart cherries, that crop was so heavy that probably 30% of our field of view was actual cherries, which don't respond in the same way as leaves. So what we looked at is trying to use a thermal image to partition, you know, the parts of the field of view that were fruit and branches versus what was actually leaf.
Okay, one more.
You know, we're just, as she asked if we were able to figure out transpiration rates to the TDR data that we have. This is the only TDR data that we have. We're just barely starting this process. So the evaporation that we're seeing is actually from the cut surface of that piece of wood. So it's not an actual transpiration measurement. What we're trying to establish at this point is, if we hydrate the wood, do we see the response and permittivity from this sensor? So once we've kind of established this a little better, we'll actually deploy it in the field and see what we can see.
Paul?
Yeah, I see that your Y scales on those two graphs are not the same, and it makes me wonder how comparable they'll affect the yields.
You are right. I may have misspoken. I'm sorry. I can tell you that the permittivity levels from the TDR sensor are more similar to what we would expect from something that's really hydrated than the Campbell sensors. But I may have overstepped my bounds in saying that the slope is different because the scales are different. Thanks for noticing that.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.